podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello there, my name is Miles Jupp, cricket fan, and together with my co-host Mark Wood, actual cricket man, we invite you to listen to Middle Please Umpire, a new cricket podcast containing the two of us banging on and sounding off together about cricket and quite possibly all manner of other things, while lifting the lid on Mark's life as an international cricketer. And as if that wasn't enough, we shall be welcoming some great guests along the way and chatting to them about life on and off the playing field as they spill the beans, drop some truth bombs, and see if they can withstand the scrutiny of our brutal interrogations. Middle Please Umpire is available right now from all your favourite podcast providers.
It's Monday, 18th of January, and Man United is still top of the league. Let that sink in for a moment. It wasn't that long ago when we went down 6-1 at home to Spurs. This time last year, after 18 games, we had 25 points versus 52 for Liverpool. That's a difference of 27 points. Now we're 3 points ahead of them. We're unbeaten in 16 games away from home, and Liverpool are 67 games unbeaten at Anfield. Was this always going to be a draw? I mean, we've had 3 0-0 draws in the last 5 games at Anfield. It was 0-0. Was this a missed opportunity or a point gained? In the virtual studio today, we have two of the biggest Reds I know, the people's pundit, Chris Curley.
Hello, Ben.
And the uncompromising Daniel Riley. I'm your host, handsome Ben Paul. And this is the Man United Redcast. So, missed opportunity or 3 points gained? Dan Riley, what do you think?
I think a small part of me thinks there was a slight missed opportunity at a moment in the second half, but I can't be too greedy. And you must always look at Anfield. Anfield's always been a very, very difficult place to go. Even when we were flying high, you know, winning titles, we'd go there and come unstuck. So to go there and with a very, with a team that isn't as good as Liverpool's, let's be honest, we went there, we put on a good performance. I think there was a clear plan to not go and be out of the game in the first 15, 20 minutes. So it was cautious. And in the second half, we came into the game. We looked like a team that was competing for the title. And I think it was a great point. And I think, yes, perhaps we could have maybe pressed a little bit. But then who knows? If we got a bit harder, maybe that missed opportunity would have become a defeat. So I'm more than happy with the result yesterday. Even though it was a cagey game, I thought it was a very interesting game. And I enjoyed it because, you know what, it's great when we're competing and we're not, you know, just going there and making up the numbers. So I was really pleased.
Yeah, it was quite enjoyable. I mean, look, we went there last season, we lost 2-0, and it was a flattering scoreline at 2-0. We could have been beaten a lot more convincingly. They had two midfielders as centre-halves. Their front three aren't really firing at the moment. Was this a chance that we could have taken, really grabbed hold of, Chris, to actually put one over on the old enemy?
I mean, I've been excited. I was nervous all week. I woke up Sunday nervous. I was snapping around the house. I realised it was nerves. And I missed that feeling because I felt 36 again. We hadn't had it for such a long time. And I think, so I was happy with a point before the game. I think, because that would be massive progress from where we've been before going to Anfield when we've been embarrassed and walloped and it made us all feel incredibly depressed. So the progress in effectively 6 months is massive at Old Trafford with Ollie. And we should always give him credit. I've always been an Ollie in fan. But having said that, I've woken up this morning going, that was a missed opportunity, you know, because Liverpool aren't at it. I thought Henderson and Fabinho played really well. They kept a high line. They didn't change their tactics. We didn't really threaten them as much as I thought we should have or could have done. I thought at the back we were very strong. Luke Shaw's best performance in the United shirt, and I am not a Luke Shaw fan, but I thought he was outstanding. And, you know, hopefully he'll charge reasonable rental prices for Mo Salah living in his pocket.
Didn't you go on holiday with Luke Shaw once?
Well, on holiday, I met him in Marbella in a bar. And all I'll say is he was just after he signed and he never bought a drink. He never bought a drink. Cost me a fortune. Cost me a fortune because over there you have 500 pound bottles of vodka. I was like, what? No one tells you that.
So you stumped up 500 quid for a pet, for a bottle of vodka.
Me and a couple of friends, I will share the burden. Yeah. I mean, he barely, I don't think he was allowed in there. I think he was still 17. He might have still been 17.
What? So you've been going to bars with underage men again. But so he...
Listen, he stood up again. We all know something I can bring up. And I will bring it up. And I will bring it up. And it's not anything. I promise you, it's not. It's something else. Just say just a friendly warning.
For people who think we're just three random people thrown together by a United podcast, me, Chris, and Dan, we've got what? We've known each other 20 odd years, gone to many, many games, home and away. We know dark things. We know dark things. I'd love it.
Hold on a minute. Can I just say, not that dark, listener, dear listener, not that dark at all. The darkest man among us is the man who doth protested so much of.
So coming back to Luke Shaw, he was probably on 50 grand, 100 grand a week at that point as he started off United. Was too tight to buy a bottle of vodka. But man of the match, I mean, Dan, was he your man of the match, Luke Shaw? And if so, why?
I think he was. I think he was man of the match. I think he was probably our most assured defender and kind of going forward as well. He was a threat. It was a hard one because there was a lot of players I think who put in a really solid performance. I'd go along with that. I think the difference in him when you watch him is incredible. It's almost like watching a different player. The level of, and I think it's confidence, isn't it? I mean, it's just it. You know, we knew he was talented because he showed that when he was a youngster coming through the ranks and had a really good first season with Southampton. I mean, it's finally twigged. You know, things have come into place. So yeah, I'd go along with Shaw there.
I mean, he's come on quite a bit, and defensively, I thought he was brilliant. He was composing the ball. He can still do much more in the attacking third, though. He can still be a bit more courageous in his passing, I feel. You know, he did set up the chance for Bruno in the last 15 minutes, which Alisson saved. I just kind of wished he'd have tried dinking it to Cavani at the back post, because Cavani's going to benefit by stuff in the air, I think, when we're crossing the ball. And Shaw and Wan-Bissaka, it's not really their thing. And that was the frustration yesterday, is that there were still moments where we could believe we could win the game. In the first 25 minutes, Liverpool were always going to come out strong. But we had the belief on the ball to try and counter their press. Yet when we did break their first press, which they're brilliant at, the best in the world at, for 3 or 4 years, openings occurred, and then we rushed and weren't composed enough and sloppy with that final decision making. And that's not an ability thing, because we know they've got the ability. That's a psychological thing, and that's about belief that they can take on the best teams, make the best decisions, rather than having this panic to their play at times, which slowly dissipated as the game went on and wore on, and they started to believe they could do some damage. And to be honest, when you think about the better chances in the match, United had them. And you know, if we'd have nicked it 1-0, that would have made sense.
We could have nicked it. Coming back to a couple of good points you made there, I mean, we did lack rhythm. Liverpool are incredible at breaking down play and breaking the moves. And we could have taken advantage of that a little bit more. I think the chances that we missed, you talked about Luke Shaw assisting Bruno. He could have done a bit better. There's the Pogba one at the end, which he just needed to keep low and hard. That could have been we could have smashed and grabbed it then. But Rashford, he had an opportunity at the end. He went for it. He could have dinked it right to Pogba and he could have dinked it left to Cavani. He made the wrong choice. He's a bit off the pace at the moment, isn't he, Rashford? Is it because he's being played out of position? Because let's face it, the front three, none of them played in the position they're most comfortable in. Pogba played on the started on the right. He's better, more comfortable on the left. Rashford's more comfortable on the left. Martial's more comfortable in the centre. I mean, they tactically.
Ollie's compromising the team and putting players in their best positions to get Pogba into the team somehow. That's clear. I mean, Rashford, I think we could all agree Rashford is left wing, right? And he's not a centre forward and, you know, crying out for a Mark Hughes type yesterday to hold the ball up and stick his backside into the centre half and throw a few punches, frankly, at Jordan Henderson. We're missing that. With Rashford up front, he's got to try and... He's not played there for a while. He hasn't got the physical presence for it on his own. So that chance he had when he went through, I think Cavani was the dummy run and he fancied his chances with his pace to beat Fabinho when the gap was made. But Fabinho showed how quick he was. So I thought it was 50-50, that one. I don't blame him too much for that.
But Dan, do you think tactically we got it spot on yesterday for what we're after? I don't know.
Well, I read an interesting article this morning in the by the Telegraph's tactical analyst, and these guys often see things that I don't. And he spoke about how Pogba was brought in to kind of negate the threat of Robertson, and that he'd sort of that was a kind of a plan of Ollie's because Robertson is often Liverpool's most attacking player. And I think, you know, looking back, it did, you know, that did work. The only thing I felt was that with that kind of in and around the sort of 70-minute mark, I just felt like maybe Van de Beek could have come in just to add just to give us something else, a little bit of something. I mean, I'm still a little bit mystified as to his absence. I looked at that game and I thought, there's a player who can definitely bring something to this match where openings seem to be happening. And I kind of maybe would have sacrificed one of Fred or McTominay and seen if he could have come in and done something. But I'm not going to... Who am I to criticise Ollie?
The Van de Beek one is interesting when, you know, he played those two or three league games, Southampton, and there was one at home. And he played really well in a two with Fred, I think it was. And then he's not really played since. And I like him for his continuity and his pressing in terms of his passing, his continuity of passing. He, simple terms, he keeps the ball and passes it to a red shirt all the time. Whereas, you know, one of the things we did yesterday was give the ball a bit away too easily. Certainly in that first half hour of the match, and it settled down. And that was the first half hour, Trent and Robertson was getting, were getting forward. I mean, if Firmino had laid Robertson in the first 20 minutes, instead of taking the shot on, then, you know, he was clear on goal with a clear shot. So it's interesting, Van de Beek. I think he needs to get his games, and I think he will get his games. You know, you've got Sheffield United coming up, Fulham on Wednesday. There are opportunities there to play him. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and, you know, we think Bruno's tired, and Bruno might need to miss a game soon.
Well, that's the point. Bruno is knackered, and it's clear. And we cannot overuse him, and we have done. I think Fulham, the next game, we can slip Van de Beek into that very position. He can play that role really well. Can he not?
He can. I just wouldn't be so sure that, you know, if you want to make the benefit of getting a point at Anfield, you've got to beat Fulham. And I would still play Bruno against Fulham. I might, because it's an away game. And Fulham are better than you think. You know, they gave Liverpool a tough time. They gave Chelsea a tough time at Craven Cottage. They're physical, they're mobile. I might maybe think about resting Bruno for Sheffield United next week, really, when it's at home. And I would expect us to beat Sheffield United without needing Fernandes.
But he looks,
so I might wait a week.
He looks knackered now, and we've got Fulham and then Liverpool.
Well, the cup game on Sunday is interesting about what if people will change their team a bit, because will Liverpool rotate in any degree? I'm not so sure. Their bench, one of the things that was a noticeable difference yesterday was our bench was far stronger than Liverpool's. And that hasn't been something we've been able to say for the last couple of years. Slowly that bench has evolved to become, you know, giving Ollie great options of bringing Cavani, Greenwood, Van der Beek on.
Well, they're playing on fumes. If they don't make any January transfers, I'll be quite shocked, because they're playing on fumes. To you know, with two centre-halves at centre-backs, they can't really rest key players. So
did it before, but teams who win the title drop off. It's really hard. You know, it's very hard. Very few teams have retained the title. We've done it three times, but very few teams have been able to do it. And I think that they are. I remember also, you know, that front three is 28, 29 now. They're a bit older. They've been going hard at it for 3 or 4 years. They may have, you know, as Ollie said, to use a quote at Liverpool, he talked about us, was when you reach the top of Everest, if you don't do anything, you're going to go cold and you're going to die. And I think they've reached the top of Everest. And it's like, well, what's next for us? That's the challenge. And that's difficult for teams. That's always been difficult for teams. And, you know, they could be sixth, Liverpool, soon. You know, Everton have got a game in hand on them. Villa have got 3 games in hand on them. But we don't, you know, all the better for it. I just want to make sure all those Scousers who booked open-top buses lose their deposits.
Yep. Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back very shortly.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Welcome back to the Man United podcast. I'm Ben Paul. With me is Chris Curley and Dan Riley. If there are any fans, if only there were fans in the studio, you'd get rousing applause there. News just in, Inter Miami have just signed a brand new manager. Who is it?
Not Phil Neville.
It's Phil Neville.
How did he get that job?
Oh, my goodness.
How did he get it?
I have no idea.
Wow. I mean, I saw him being linked with it the other day. And
I like the idea though of Phil Neville like in a Corvette driving down Miami Beach with his shades on, yeah, and Gloria Estefan playing as he's going off to work. I just think that's like, oh, it fits like a glove.
I mean, you can just see him front page of the Sun every single day, can't you? In and out, rolling out of different clubs every night, different links with different Miami-based female celebrities of note.
Phil does, though, wear a sports jacket. I know this for a fact. He still wears a sports jacket and rolls his sleeves up. I know this for a fact. So he is going to fit right in over there.
Is that Beckham's club?
Yes.
Yeah. Keep up, Dan. Keep up. Yeah. I mean, that's what we're all implying through the whole of that. How did he get that?
So this week we have to say a very sad goodbye to Fosu Mensah, and one of the best chants on the terraces that I've come across. So no more going Fosu Mensah.
When you said that, I thought you were talking about your goldfish. No, it's a very sad goodbye.
Or Colin Bell. But Fosu Mensah, $1.5 million. How shit are we at business? I mean, You can't buy anything for $1.5 million these days in football.
Wow. Where's he gone?
He's gone to buy a Leverkusen.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you see any fresh blood coming to Old Trafford this month?
No. Which is a shame, because if you think about what I think we're still missing, right, which is the centre half we all talked about, and it is someone to play in the right wing. They were Ollie's top two priorities in the summer window, and we've still not got them. And I think if we had them, and if we had a Sancho on that right wing, a proper right winger who's comfortable out there, not an inverted one that likes to cut inside, then who knows where we'll be. Well, I'll know where we'll be. We'd have got more points if we were on more games. So I think it's proof to be told is back the manager. And if Ollie wants someone who's available in January to push us over the line, then they should get him.
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with Mr. Armadillo, but a £37 million purchase for a 19-year-old that's barely played it.
Clearly, they think he's someone. And clearly, talking about business, clearly spending that amount of money on someone that young, they think he's good. But we need someone to go straight into the team right now.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if him or Palistri could actually could debut in the next month or two.
I think it's Monday, so I think they're playing for the under-23s tonight.
It'd be interesting to see them. It would be.
but there'll be outgoings, I think, in January. I mean, Romero, Rojo, Foster Mensah's gone. You know, Jesse Lingard is held hostage, I believe, and wants to try and leave, but they won't let Ollie won't quite let him leave yet. You know, there's Phil Jones, obviously, who's still hiding there in a cupboard somewhere.
Isn't Steve Bruce trying to sweep up? Isn't he still really a United spy over at Newcastle? Isn't he linked with three of them? I think Lingard, Rojo and Romero. Oh, no, Phil Jones.
I think Rojo's rumoured to go back to Boca Juniors. That's kind of his preferred option. Bruce has been linked with Phil Jones and Lingard. But I just want those guys off the payroll. I want that era of those players gone and done with. I mean, it kind of is because they're getting nowhere near the first team squad, really. And you can see now there's a core group of 20 players who are in that first team squad, which we can move forward with and make the progress that we've been making. Okay. You know, United are currently have the longest unbeaten run in Europe amongst the top five leagues.
Well, you look at the stats since Bruno joined the team, and we would have won the title if you played half a season from last year and half a season from this year. I've heard rumours that Ramos is coming to United. I've also heard rumours that Moses Caicedo wasn't quite the Kante 101 or 2.1 that Tim Vickery was claiming. And it also seems that Haaland's going to go to City next year, which would be shit.
Yeah, I heard about Chelsea were going to apparently go balls out for him. But yeah, it's
everybody be interested with Haaland if they can get him. But you know, Mino Raiola is just going to play everybody off against each other. Personally, I don't think we should get involved in any of that. And I would be keeping very close tabs on someone like Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who I think I've for a long time said has got the potential to be a Man United number nine. You know, Cavani's there for a year, maybe two. We'll see how that goes as the season progresses. But, you know, we do. I think we're so close. We're so close from really getting a finished team. The finished team is never finished, I should say that. But there's a lot going on with rumours. And the Ramos thing, I think, is just nonsense. You know, he's used us before to get another contract out of Real Madrid. He's just doing that again. And as much as I would like him just to annoy the Scousers, and then that's not the reason for buying him, really.
Chris, would you see Calvert-Lewin coming in down the middle with Greenwood and Rashford either side?
Yeah, basically.
Probably. I mean, so maybe Martial.
I think Martial isn't showing the consistency for that position. And I don't think the way the football is going, I don't think he's got the physicality to play number nine. You know, in the way that I think what we with our wingers, the way that we're playing, we do need a bit of a wall number nine to keep us up there, and not a Firmino type number nine.
Yeah, a presence.
We really need a physical presence up there to keep us up the pitch.
Yeah, like a little counter attacking.
Well, Lukaku couldn't trap a bag of cement.
Do you know what? City rumors are that City are going to go all out for Lukaku.
If he ends up at Man City, I'll be amazed. I mean, I read today that, you know, Pep's got $200 million to spend in the summer.
Yeah.
I'd spend it all on Harry Kane. I would spend it all. If I had that, I'd spend it all on Harry Kane. If I'm Man City with my squad, I'm spending it all on Harry Kane. That's
absolutely
all they need.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing that I thought, the thing of just to, as a sort of last thought on the yesterday's game. For me, that was the thing that I thought City are going to win this league, having seen both us and Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, City look stronger as a team at the moment, all over the pitch. But they're missing a centre-forward. I mean, they've got a centre-forward who's scoring goals. But Foden, Sterling, Gundogan, they've all picked up in the last month. Stones has come back into form. They haven't really played anyone in the last month. I will say that. But they're looking strong. And of course, they've got a game in hand over us. So technically, if they win that, they would go above us. But that physical number nine thing, I think we need. And that's why I hope Cavani plays against Fulham on Wednesday, which is, you know, a vital game for us to take those 3 points, to make the draw a good one at Anfield.
Which is why I think we should, if we had the chance to get Haaland, you know, I think we should get him. I really, really want to see him at Old Trafford. I think Kane would be, I think he's beyond. I think Haaland, a 20-year-old of that physical stature. But, you know, we can all dream of many things. So, game's coming up. We've obviously got Fulham. Would you change the team dramatically? Dan?
I think Donny van der Beek should be playing in this game. I think, as Chris mentioned earlier, I think this is a tough one, because I think Fulham have picked up a lot in the last few weeks, and you know, we kind of, it's one of those teams that you don't want to be playing when they're kind of getting a little bit of momentum going. So I think that's a real to reach for an old cliche. It's a potential banana skin, this one. And I think we need to be, you know, we don't want to weaken this team too much. It could be it's that old thing of, do we maybe rest a few more against Liverpool in the cup? Who knows? I think, you know, we are in with a chance of this championship, and we mustn't sort of take our foot off the gas now. Because I think
you're right. We've got a chance of this championship, and that's, for me, the priority. I think Baye will come back in for Lindelof. I think Telles might come in for Shaw, just because that Shaw's played quite a lot recently, and he might do that. And I think Cavani will come in up top. I don't think he'll change it much more than that. Bringing Cavani in will probably mean Martial on the bench, Rashford on the left, or maybe Martial might start. And I think you'll put Pogba in a two in midfield with either Fred or McTominay. I think you'll do that. So there's probably four changes, I think, from Sunday that might go on.
The Telles Shaw thing's working quite well, actually. They seem to be nicely interchangeable. Whoever plays, we seem to be really strong down that left.
I you know, from an attacking point of view, with Cavani and crosses, Telles is much more likely to put a decent ball into the box to put on his head. And so I like Telles when we're playing Cavani, because I worry where's the Cavani service going to come from, which I thought happened last week, and when he started, it was like he wasn't really getting anything in the box, because Martial and Rashford, and they play intricate on the outside, they don't really cross the ball. So
let's stick Mason out on the right, because you get a lot of good service.
But funnily enough, wasn't it Fulham we played when we put in the record number of crosses with Moyes?
I think it was. Craven Cottage, though, was always a good away game. I always liked one of the away games to go to Craven Cottage. Was always a fun one.
The one of my favourite ever United goals is that Ronaldo winner. Do you remember at Craven Crosses, that late winner? That is just a brilliant, brilliant
moment. Because that was the season 06, 07 when we first won the league, I think. It was one of those goals, I think it was March time. It was one of those goals where you thought, all right, we're going to win it again this year. Last 5 minutes, something amazing. This is what happens. This is how you win league championships.
My favourite Craven Cottage goal when I was there was Van Nistelrooy, taking on pretty much from halfway line again, taking on three or four different players.
That was at Old Trafford.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah. I'll tell you why it was at Old Trafford. Because I bought a ticket off a tout outside the ground, right? And I ended up being sat with all the Fulham lot, right? And it was the weirdest experience, because Fulham, they're quite a passive group of people in comparison to others. And all the United fans were chanting at the Fulham lot. And I'm like sat there going, but you're not me. I'm not one of them. It's not me. And then, of course, Van Nistelrooy scores a hat-trick, I think, in that game, that world. I couldn't get up and celebrate, which is even more annoying because I had him in my fantasy league team.
Oh, that's the worst part of it. All right, well, let's start wrapping it up. So, predictions against Fulham. Hard-earned victory?
I'm going to go...
3-1 for me for United.
Yeah. Cavani to get the bag a couple, I think.
And for anybody that doesn't on our WhatsApp chat, Dan Riley is prolific when it comes to predictions for Cavani. I think you pretty much, I think you call him to the minute. So I'm putting money on, if you're going for with Cavani for at least 2 goals, I'm putting money on it. Mine always come off, they never come off for me. Chris Curley's always about one result away from earning like £50,000. It's always one last minute goal that screws you.
Take QPR. QPR always. Or any match I see Tony Cotty at Soccer Saturday kills my Acca. Tony Cotty on Soccer Saturday is the Acca killer. It is always a nil-nil. Nothing happens. One time I was so annoyed at this pattern of behaviour, I tweeted Matt Letizier to find out if he could tell me where Tony Cotty was this week. Because he's the Acca killer.
Did he respond?
He actually did. Said, I don't know. Tune in at 12. And that was all. That, wow. But I did get a reply from the COVID denier.
Before we go, because we didn't have a podcast last week, we didn't get the chance to pay homage to one of United's gracious sons who had his 64th birthday on January the 11th. We are, of course, talking to the man with the smile to launch 1,000 ships, the man who my son is named after, Brian Robson. Chris, your final words on Brian Robson?
The best.
Dan Riley, would he fit into this team?
He'd fit into any team, Ben.
Younger viewers, get on YouTube for Brian Robson's goals.
Yeah.
He was Roy Keane and Paul Scholes combined, a one-man team that kept us going for a decade. I miss him. I miss him. I loved him so much, I tried to copy his smile in my school photographs.
I had Brian Robson's boots as a kid, and New Balance. You know, the modern vernacular of talking about different DMs, number sixes, number eights, etc. He was every type of central midfielder you can think of in one player, and I think that's what you know. I mean, people talk about Keane, and I personally, I think Robson edges him just a little bit because I think he had more goals, and that's what the game's about.
He gave it everything. You tried to copy his smile, Chris. I tried to copy his style, and I broke my leg 3 times playing football, and that was because of Robbo, because he never shirked a tackle. And
when I played 5-a-side a while ago, and I dislocated my shoulder. A guy called Tim tackled me and I was going through and I went under and I popped my shoulder out and it's the closest I've ever felt to feeling like Brian Robson.
You saw the white light.
I thought finally I'm a proper footballer like Robbo.
There were tears of joy as the doctor gave you that news.
There really was. It really was. I was like, oh, this happened to Robbo. I'm just like Robbo. I was 33.
I think it happened to him three times in a season, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I've always said about Brian Robson, I'll say it again, but if Brian Robson was fit, two things would have happened. One thing, Diego Maradona would have never have scored that goal. And not, I don't mean the hand of God, because he would have tackled him. Peter Reid would not have to chase him for the rest of his life.
Second thing is,
England would have won a World Cup in either 86 or 90. They'd have won the World Cup if Brian Robson was fit. And he was unlucky with injury before those tournaments. You think about the fuss that was going on when Beckham and Rooney nearly missed tournaments and the lack of fuss there was when Robson got injured and was out of 86 and 90 or came home from both tournaments early. We would have won a World Cup. That's how good Brian Robson was.
The closest I ever got to Brian Robson was I think I was in the same bar as Claire Tomlinson once. But on that note...
I just looked it up, by the way, Dan. Cavani to get a brace against Fulham, 13-2.
There you go. It's printing money.
7-1-ish.
Printing money, that is. He'll end up getting a hat-trick now.
We'll report his hamstring in the warm-up.
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Chris Curley, Dan Riley, me, Ben Paul. This has been the Man United podcast.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.